everybody, and thanks so much again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hill, and as always, mi amigo Kyle Philly Philson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios. I'm pumped. I'm ready for Christmas. My house is fully decorated, folks. I got the lights outside. I got the tree out front. I got the tree inside, and everything inside has got lights on it. I don't know why, but this year, we felt super in the spirit. Like, we are ready for it. Like, we were ready to go.
Dude, you've had your lights up outside for a hot minute now.
Since before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Normally, it's
You're the people I hate.
I procrastinate and procrastinate. I don't know. We just felt like it. Something's different. We need a change. And I'm looking forward to this Christmas. We're not going out of town. We're not doing nothing
nice,
like we
normally
do. Yeah, I'm just ready to get it over. Luke's pumped. He just had a birthday. You just had a birthday.
Yeah,
how was your birthday?
Yeah.
How was your birthday,
It was
Brett?
Good, man. It was real good. Yeah, everything was good times. Yeah. I was one of those.
Did you get anything cool? Nothing. You got nothing?
Oh, I got a few cool things. I got a Critical Role thing that I wanted.
Oh.
So my wife hooked me up with that. Yeah, and the kids got me some stuff. But it's nothing. I don't really go big on birthdays, right?
Like, I don't either.
I just don't really. I never, like we've always said, I never really got to celebrate them. So
I just
the way it falls, I just don't ever, like, literally my birthday this year, my family was gone. I was home alone.
See, that sounds perfect to me.
Right? It was amazing.
and maybe, you know, my wife makes a big deal. Her sister's the same way about their birthday. I mean, it is a big deal to them. To me, I don't even want acknowledgement. They're like, you don't want to go nowhere?
Yeah, it is what it is.
You don't want to do nothing? I'm like, why do I want to acknowledge that I'm getting older? No. If it was like Benjamin Button and I was getting younger, I'd probably get more and more psyched every birthday. But I'm not a child. Like, I don't care.
As I've gotten older. When I say older, I'm talking about even as a young person. That's the way I'd always felt, is I'm like, I've not accomplished anything. It's not like you're doing something and we can celebrate that, oh, Kyle did this or, oh, Cam did. No, man, that's not what happens. You woke up.
You can literally lay in a coma and still have a birthday.
Y'all
you
are going
to do anything.
Yeah, y'all are going to. So, yeah, I don't really care. So, I mean, it's just one of those things. And I might have been different if I was raised differently or if my birthday was around a different time, right?
But right.
It never works out. So that's just how it is.
And
but I will tell you this.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
So my mother got into an accident on Thanksgiving.
Oh, that's right. You were telling
me this. Three car pile up. Boy, totaled her vehicle. Totaled all three vehicles. Woman pulled right out in front of her. Busted a U-turn in the fog on a main highway. Really not a good move to do. But anyway, that's what I spent my whole thing is. My whole Thanksgiving was taking care of her, getting everything. But she was fine. Literally, I had to go pick her up, get her stuff, drive her back to Thanksgiving. She ate and then take her back home. She's, again, you just... Like I told her, like cockroaches, you just can't kill them, man. That's just, they just don't go away.
Well, that's good. I'm glad she's okay.
Yeah, she's
out
fine.
Of that, you know,
and
unscathed. But
we lost somebody.
Yeah.
And for those that keep up on Instagram or that keep up, already know, but we lost Linda Godfrey. Linda passed this week. And it really sucks. She was an amazing person. So much fun to talk to on the show, off the show. You could message her, talk to her. Linda was great. We had a lot of great conversations with Linda. And so, yeah, she will be missed. Yeah, the queen of dog men, I guess is what it would be.
That's right.
I mean, she's the one.
We were lucky enough to have her on the show twice.
Yeah.
I know that we did a classic rewind not too long ago, but there was another interview we did with her all the way back in like 2013. The audio is not that great, but it was interesting. And what a pleasure to have her on the show, not once, but twice.
Yeah.
She was very fun to talk to. She was silly. She got some really good books. I know the book, her most recent one was like, I Know What I Saw.
Yeah.
Excellent book. If you're into cryptozoology, would make a fantastic gift for Christmas.
What made her so great is because she never took herself serious.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. She was extremely lighthearted, very knowledgeable, but extremely lighthearted about the whole thing.
She,
it was so much fun.
Like you said, she didn't proclaim herself as a cryptozoologist. She was just a journalist.
Yeah.
And just happened to come across the sheriff's files that had a title Werewolf on it, right?
Yeah.
Which led to the Beast of Bray Road. I mean, it was, I don't know, crazy coincidence that happened. But man, I didn't even know she was feeling bad.
Yeah, I don't think she'd felt well in the last couple of years.
Didn't even know that.
Yeah.
But check this out. Moving
on.
We got a pretty interesting story sent to us. It says, hello, Cam and Kyle.
Hello.
I hope you don't mind me emailing the show with a sighting I had back in 1994. That's the year we graduated high school, Brad.
Wow. That is back in the day, isn't it?
Yeah. It says, I've always lived in Greater Manchester in the UK. Back in 1994, I used to work nights for a friend, John. He had started his own security business. As you can imagine, he was very busy, and needed some time to himself and his family, so he asked if I would work 3 to 4 nights a week for him until he was on his feet and up and running properly. I agreed and would drive to his house in West Gorton to pick up his car he used, as it had the company logos on it. I would park my car outside of his house and off I would go. John had a contract to patrol the White Hill Industrial Estate in Reddish, a borough of Stockport. You can Google map all these places I'm talking about. It's all very real. On the far side of the industrial ned to a railway line, there was a smallish old building where they used to restore cast iron baths, re-enamel them. Anyway, over the one weekend, this place was broken into, probably by kids, as I can't imagine there to be too much to steal in a place apart from spirits and paint, compressor gear, etc. During my patrols, I was asked to keep an eye on the place, just to make sure the thieves didn't come back, so I would take about a half an hour to an hour, then go back and park nearby an old building. I will never forget my experience. I can recall it like it happened last night. I had on a radio station named Piccadilly Radio, 1152. The presenter was called James Stanek, and his talk show, where people would call in, the show would end around 2 a.m. I was having my very late lunch and a cup of coffee out of a flask when I spotted a bright red sphere in the sky. The sky was very clear, and it was a cold night. There's no artificial lighting nearby, so I knew it wasn't reflections in the car's window. As you know, we drive our cars on the right side, and the red sphere first appeared in the driver's window. Now, here in the UK, a red traffic light is about 5 inches in diameter. This looked to be twice that size and a vivid red. I watched it just move across to my left, slowly until it was high in the windscreen to my leg. I jumped out of the car and just stood watching it float past completely silent. I was watching it for about 2 minutes. In the car, we had a light plugged onto a battery, and it was 5 million candles, because as I've said, there's some very dark places we pass by on our patrol. By this time, the object had moved over to my left and was heading toward the railway. I would guess it was about 100 meters up and 150 to 200 meters away at about a 10 o'clock position in the sky. I grabbed the light and flashed it twice at the object, not really thinking. But to my complete shock, the object stopped and hovered silently. It stayed there for about 30 seconds, then just blinked out. No more red sphere, just a diamond shape in the sky. It looked like a cube on a point. Then take the left and right points and pull them outwards. A dark shape against the night sky. Then I just stood watching as it floated into the distance, out of sight, heading towards Manchester. Cam and Kyle, I'm 55 years old, man, and I'm married with 2 grown sons and now grandchildren. I'm as sane as I can be, or think I am. I don't take drugs, just a wine, me and my wife in the evening while watching Netflix. This is a true event that I will take to my grave, and I have tried to recall it as honestly as I can. My name is Eric. I just set up a Facebook page, and you can check me out, and I'll give you a full permission to read this account on the air. Well, I hope you do. I look forward to the next episode of Expanded Perspectives. By the way, I've been listening now for at least 6 years, and I still love it. Thanks.
Woo-hoo-hoo, Eric, thanks so much.
Yeah, very cool, right?
Look, that's like hitting the lotto.
Yeah.
Right? Like, nobody's saying that you're crazy. No, but look, you got to see something that very few of us really get to see.
I know. I'm jealous. Super
Dude,
jealous.
All the time.
I would love to see something like that. I liked how he got out of the car and, like, flashed the light at it and the thing quit moving. Like, it noticed him.
Like, he was like, oh, wait, something saw us.
Yeah. What? Right.
Oh, stop moving. Something. One of them noticed us.
Very cool. I appreciate you sending that in,
Eric. That is great.
That's an awesome story. Thank you. Also, thank you for listening and supporting the show for 6 or 7 years, however long you've been listening.
So let me ask you this, Philly.
Sure.
And I know it's hard to say because it's never happened. We always bring this stuff up with the let me ask you this stuff. But it would be an overwhelming sense when it finally dawns on you when you're looking at something like that, wouldn't it?
Oh, I would think so, yeah.
Like, because they talk about it. Like, I would just picture looking at it, and then when you finally, it registers that what you're seeing, it's like it just crashes on you.
I would.
Not everything's like, oh.
Yeah, I don't know how it couldn't, right? And he said, like, it's vivid in his mind, even to this day, even though it happened in 1994. I mean, that's 28 years ago.
Knows exactly what it was.
Yeah, and I could imagine if you saw something like that, you wouldn't be able to forget it.
Well, there's core memories, like you start making as a child, right? Where those things are, like, burned into you. That's one of those core memories. Like, there's certain memories of stuff that we've done that you're never going to forget.
Never.
And then there's other stuff that you're like, man, I don't even remember being there, right? Like, that was one of those things, like... We'd laughed not long ago. Kyle and I had looked at pictures of a party that we had been to years ago, like over 20 years ago. And neither one of us remember even being there. There's pictures that we have no idea. Like, I don't remember that party. He's like, I don't remember that. None of us remember that. It's like one of those time slips or maybe the Mandela effect, right? Like, that was a party and that was our other selves or something.
Off. It just was, you know, just not that important. I mean, my wife constantly gets on to me that she told me already. And I'm just like, I don't remember that. She does all the,
it's kind of annoys me. I'm not surprised.
Like, I'll ask something and she'll say, every time starts out with, well, I already told you. And then she'll tell me, I go, can you just cut out? I already told you. Just tell me.
You know what the best part
is,
though?
You're wasting your time by telling me you told me.
She's built that into canon now. Now she knows that even if she forgets to tell you, all she has to do is preface it with, well, I already told you, and you're going to believe her.
Oh, right? Absolutely.
Because you're going to be like, yeah, I guess you already told me.
Yeah.
When she don't have to tell you anything anymore, she just has to say, well, I already told you.
Yeah, I even ask every time she says it, will you please stop telling me that you already told me? Just tell me. Like, you're making a one insert, like, it's on the top shelf on the left.
That's
Wouldn't
all
that
it's
be easier
say.
Yeah. than explaining to me that you told me already, then yeah. telling me? You're like, you're wasting breath.
I think she's just getting even with you.
Maybe, probably.
I've got one here for you, homie, about a gray-haired Bigfoot. You know
the
how
gray
these
hair.
Things? Gray hair.
What was that on Last Mohicans?
Last
remember?
Of the Mohicans.
Talking about the gray hair.
So,
I'll wipe the seed of the gray hair.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Know before you go or something. That's Magua.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
What is that? That's Wes Studi. That's the actor that played Magua. Yeah, dude, Wes Studi is awesome.
Yeah, he is awesome. Daniel Day-Lewis, again, man, that guy.
Hats off. That guy's a beast.
He's such a good actor that not only does he play characters, he looks physically different. Right? You know what I'm
thing.
Talking about.
Okay, so not to get off topic real quick, but I read a thing online not long ago that you know where in The Gangs of New York, where he plays Bill the Butcher.
Mm-hmm. Excellent movie.
When he's sitting and he's speaking to Leo's character after he's already dismissed the woman.
Uh-huh.
And he, what is her name? It's...
Cameron Diaz.
She's gone. He's talking. And you know where he taps his eye with that glass eye with the blade?
Yeah.
Daniel Day-Lewis had a glass contact made, and he practiced that. He is legitimately tapping that glass contact thing to make it look so real, because it is real.
Yeah.
He did that because that's, look, it's one thing you could, hey, bro, if anybody out there knows Daniel, go ahead and forward this to him. I just want to tell him.
He's busy cobbling
shoes. You
ain't
got to try so hard, man. They got special effects.
No, man, you do. That's what separates him. He's not only plays characters brilliantly, but he physically looks different. I don't know how many times I've watched a movie and I'd be like, holy crap, I didn't even know that was him. He looks different each time.
We've already established that Kyle's wife has to tell him more than once where something is in the counter or in the cabinet. So if y'all believe that it just summed so miraculously that he couldn't believe that was Daniel Day-Lewis, that's all for y'all. So
that's
I'm
a good point.
Go
that's a good point. See, when you're stupid, you don't know you're stupid, right?
It's like being dead. It only affects those around you.
Yeah, good point. Anyways,
okay.
Moving on with your gray-haired Bigfoot or
Bigfoot.
Whatever it was.
In 1977, here it says,
I was one.
You were, yeah. You were one. Yeah, I don't know exactly when. Well, it says in the fall, so I was two. So here we go. Of course, this is Lon sent this to me. Anything we're going to have to get Lon on. Lon's going to have to come on so we got to pick his brain.
He's been trying to get us to come on his show.
We'll have to jump over there too. Yeah, we'll have to double dip him. So here we go. So this is, in 1977, I was 11 years old, and I lived on the U.S. military base at Aberdeen Proving Grounds in Maryland. And we lived at the end of the post. There was about half a mile of woods behind our houses that emptied into the Chesapeake Bay tidal inlets. Behind my house was a lane, and then there was 30 foot of grass where our garage was. Now, it was in the fall and dark, of course, after dinner, and I had to put my bike away in the garage. So after I put the bike in, I closed the doors and was closing the padlock when I got this feeling that something was creeping up behind me.
Ooh.
Well, I walked across the lane and back to our sidewalk when I saw something moving behind an old wood pile on the wood's edge, just to the right of the garage, maybe 40 feet or so away. Well, says our back porch light was on, and I couldn't see clearly, but it looked like a tall person was hunched over looking at me from the corner of the woodpile. It was about as tall as I was, around 5 feet. I thought it was this 8th grade boy from down the street who always teased everyone. He was pretty tall. This whole family was super tall and of Nordic descent. So I yelled, "Hey, Fungi!" Yeah, it says, "I won't explain that nickname." It says, "I see you. Stop trying to scare me." The figure then withdrew into the woods without making a sound, which I thought was strange. Of course, I then ran into the house and told my brother that someone was behind the woodpile and then went in the woods. Well, the next morning, we caught the bus at 6 a.m. Now, we went to a private Catholic school that was about an hour away. So the bus pulled out of our loop road onto the main road and had to stop as they were doing some sort of road work or construction there. Sitting on the right side of the bus and looking out the window, I could see an opening in the woods down in the tidal inlet. Now, the inlet sets about 50 feet or so below. This inlet shaped like an arrowhead. I was viewing it from the tip of the arrowhead. This inlet was probably as large as 4 or 5 football fields. At this moment, I saw a large upright creature walking down the center of the inlet with its back to me. It was walking along in the direction of the open bay. I had no doubt about what I was seeing. It looked dark brown, but there was gray-tipped hair all over it. I viewed the creature for probably 10 seconds. Then the bus again began to pull away. Well, I went up to my brother in front and told him what I saw. I believe the woodpile event that night before was related. Now, I saw old Fungi the next day, and he swore he wasn't out the previous evening. And for those who think I may have seen someone in a ghillie suit, that's really not possible. Aberdeen Proving Ground is just that, a proving ground for ballistics and munitions. Heaven only knows what else people aren't out hunting, especially around Officers Row or anywhere on that post over the years. Now, I've heard some stories and some encounters there in Maryland about different Bigfoot sightings, but I have absolutely no interest in searching for these creatures at all.
I don't blame you.
So, especially that spotted one.
Smelly feet old Fungi over there.
Old Fungi hiding behind some
people.
Wood. Yeah.
Right?
So, I got this feeling, it is one of those things, and I think we too often brush it off, and you and I have discussed this, these feelings, like your gut instinct. You remember everybody's grandma would always tell you, or your mama, or somebody would always tell you, older folks would always be like, trust your gut instinct.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
that's real. That's DNA that's keeping you alive, and we've covered it. That is one of those things. When it feels off, it's usually off for a reason. Now, granted, you can freak yourself out. I've done it.
Sure.
Right? I've done it numerous times, sitting in the dark, getting all geared up, thinking you hear something. I'm going to share something that happened with me. This will give you all a good laugh. This happened a few years ago, but it's happened more than once. But it happened, I'd say, within about 3 years ago. Sitting in a stand one time, I heard, this is like early one morning, right? Like it's probably still an hour before daylight. I like to try to get in the stand comfortably an hour before the sun comes up if I'm hunting in the morning. Sometimes even before that, sometimes an hour and a half before the sun comes up. I like to get in there, I like everything to get quiet, get settled, everything, try to go back to normal. So I'm in the stand, right? And it's quiet. It's one of those where you would give anything for a breath of air. And I hear this breathing. Yes, I'm sitting in the stand really? And I hear... It's more like this. That's all I'm hearing. And it's behind me, kind of back to my right. Well, I'm like, well, what am I going to do now? My bow's hanging here to the left, right? I'm like, man, I can't turn and all
this.
Doesn't
matter. It's dark anyways.
It's dark as can be. And that's all I hear is this breathing. And this goes on for like 5 minutes. And then it moves. And it's an old cow. She'd been laying there this whole time, never moved. I walked right up in there. She'd been laying in the dark, the whole thing. But just like that, it freaked me out for 5 minutes. And it's happened to me twice where the cows, I guess they're dead asleep. Because most of the time you'll jump them if they're sleeping. They scatter. They'll scare the hell out of you, right? This one didn't.
And she didn't hear you.
I slipped right in there on her. Did the work. Slipped right in there on her. Could have got me a slow elk, right? But that's what it was. So, again, you'll freak yourself out. But that was one of those things. I guess it is it could be 50-50. I didn't go crazy, right, when I heard it, but it was enough to give me chills to make me think, man, I kind of wished I hadn't come in there till the sun came up.
Dude, I've done it. When we were mule deer hunting in Arizona,
oh,
I told you I was in my war bonnet hammock.
Yeah.
We were miles from any road.
Yeah.
And I kept hearing this noise in the middle of the night. I'm like, what the hell is that? Turned out it was whiskers on my chin rubbing on the
inside. I remember you telling us that the next
morning. Once I figured it out, I was fine. But there was a good 8 to 10 minutes where I was freaked out. Like, seriously, is Cam or Brandon messing with me? Because it's a real good way to get shot.
Yeah,
you know?
That's the best way to get hurt, is monkeying around with everybody while they're trying to sleep.
And then I start thinking about
camp.
The Mogollon monster. Oh, like, yeah. All these stories I've read. I'm like, yep, here, this is how it ends.
This is the guy that's going
to
get.
Missing 411. I'll be dead. And then Cam and Brandon will be like, well, we saw him. He went to sleep. And then we never saw him again.
Then he was gone the next morning. We've never found him since.
Yeah, so I know to freak you out. And speaking of freaking out, let's take a break. And when we get back from the break, I'm going to be talking about something that still continues to freak me out. I'm talking about the Mad Gasser of Mattoon. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. In early September 1944, a strange series of events occurred in the small central Illinois town of Mattoon. According to eyewitnesses, numerous sightings and even physical evidence was left behind. The town was under attack by a mysterious man in black who was, for unknown reasons, spraying some sort of paralyzing gas into the windows of unsuspecting residents. Who this man was, what his agenda might have been, and where he vanished to, all remain a mystery to this day. For several weeks, people showed the symptoms of exposure to an unknown poisonous gas. Things like nausea, vomiting, weakness leading to near paralysis, lightheadedness, even spitting up blood. All of the victims reported a sweet, cheap perfume-like odor permeating their homes prior to the onset of sickness. The bizarre events began on the night of August 31st, when a man awakened feeling sick. He questioned his wife about leaving the gas stove on, but when she tried to get out of bed to check, she was unable to move. Later, it was learned that a neighbor experienced the same effects that same night. The next night, a Miss Bert Kearney was awakened by a strange, sweet smell in her bedroom. When she tried to move, she found herself temporarily paralyzed. Her screams brought other neighbors, who called the police. But no sign of a gas leak was ever found. Around midnight, Bert Kearney returned home from work, unaware of what had happened earlier that evening. As he turned into his driveway, he spotted a man lurking near his house. This man was dressed in all black. He wore close-fitting clothing and a black watch cap. He was standing near a window when Kearney spotted him. The guy turned and ran away. Now, thinking he was a window peeper, Kearney gave chase, but lost the man in the darkness. As the events of the two nights became publicly known, panic
gripped the town. Who was this man? Where did he come from? What did he want? The newspapers handled the story in a wildly sensationalistic manner, and years later would be blamed for creating a hysteria that would be used to explain all of the weird things that eventually happened. But the newspapers could not be blamed for the very real happenings taking place in the town of Mattoon. By the morning of September 5th, the Mattoon Police Department had received reports of at least 4 more gas attacks. The details in each of these attacks were eerily similar. Even though none of the witnesses had compared notes or had time to check their stories, in each of the cases, the victims complained of a sickening, sweet odor that caused them to become ill and slightly paralyzed for up to 30 minutes at a time. Late on the night of September 5th, the first real clues in the Mad Gasser were discovered. They were found at the home of Carl and Beulah Cords. But what the clues actually reveal still remains a mystery. The Cords returned home late to find a white cloth lying on their porch. Miss Cords picked it up and noticed a strange smell coming from it. She held it up close to her nose and felt immediately nauseated and lightheaded. She nearly fainted, and her husband had to help her inside. Moments later, her lips and face began to swell, and her mouth actually began bleeding. The symptoms lasted for almost 2 hours. The police were called, and they took the cloth into evidence. As they searched the property, they also found a skeleton key and an empty tube of lipstick that was found on the porch. They decided this prowler was probably trying to break into their home, but it failed. Apparently, he had dropped his lipstick and a cloth with gas residue on it too. The mystery just seemed to be getting stranger and stranger by the day. Later that same night, the gasser attacked again, this time spraying gas into an open window. The attacks continued, and Mattoon residents began reporting fleeting glimpses of the gasser, always describing him as a tall, thin man in dark clothes and wearing a tight black cap. More attacks were reported, and the harried police force tried to respond to the mysterious crimes that left absolutely no clues behind. Eventually, the authorities even summoned 2 FBI agents from Springfield, Illinois, to look into the case. They needed help. But their presence did nothing to discourage the strange reports. Panic was widespread, and rumors began to circulate that the attacker was an escapee from an insane asylum, or perhaps a German spy who was testing out some sort of poisonous gas. Armed citizens took to the streets, organizing watches and patrols to stop any further attacks. But several took place anyways. The gas attacks were becoming more and more frequent, and the attacker was leaving behind evidence like footprints and sliced window screens. A local citizens' vigilante group did manage to arrest one suspect as the gasser. But later he passed a polygraph test and was released. Local businessmen announced that they would be holding a mass protest rally on Saturday, September 10th, to put more pressure on the already pressured Mattoon police force. Now, the gasser was becoming more than a threat to public safety. He was becoming a political liability and a blot on the public image of the city. The gasser, apparently not dissuaded by armed vigilantes and newspaper articles, resumed his attacks. The first incident took place at the home of a Miss Violet Driscoll and her daughter, Ramona. They awoke late in the evening to hear someone removing the storm sash on their bedroom window. They hurried out of bed and tried to run outside for help, but the fumes overcame Ramona, and she began vomiting. Her mother stated that she saw a man running away from the house. A short time later that night, the gasser sprayed fumes into a partially opened window of a room where a Miss Russell Bailey, Catherine Tuzo, and Miss Genevieve Haskell, and a Miss Haskell's young son, were all sleeping. At another home, a Miss Frances Smith, the principal of the Columbian Grade School, and her sister Maxine were also overwhelmed with gas and became ill. They began choking as they were awakened and felt partial paralysis in their legs and arms. They also said that as the sweet odor began to fill the room, a thin blue vapor, they said they heard a buzzing noise from outside and believed that it was the gasser's spraying apparatus in operation. By September 10th, the mad gasser paranoia had peaked. FBI agents were trying to track down the type of gas that was being used in the attacks, and the police force had to divide its time between looking for the gasser and keeping armed citizens off the streets. Neither law enforcement agency was having much luck. By the following Saturday night, several dozen well-armed farmers from the surrounding area had joined the patrols in the town of Mattoon. In spite of this, six attacks took place anyway, including three previously mentioned. Another couple, Miss and Miss Stuart B. Scott, returned to their farm on the edge of Mattoon late in the evening to find their house was filled with a sweet-smelling gas. This seemed to be the last straw for the Mattoon authorities. While several attacks were reported on the night of September 11th, they were all dismissed as false alarms. Newspaper accounts of the affair began to take on a more skeptical tone. And despite claims by victims and material evidence left behind, the police began to dismiss new reports of attacks and suggested that local residents were merely imagining things. The gasser could not be caught, and it seemed easier to claim that he never existed at all than to admit that no one could find him. News stories began to appear in the papers, where psychology experts opined that the women of Mattoon had dreamed up the gasser as a desperate cry for attention, as many of their husbands were overseas fighting in the war. This theory ignored the fact that many victims and witnesses were men, and that this so-called fantasy was leaving behind evidence of his existence. The Mattoon police chief issued what he felt was the final statement on the gas attacks on September 12th. He stated that large quantities of carbon tetrachloride gas were used at the local Atlas Diesel Engine Company, and that this gas must be causing the reported cases of illness and paralysis. It could be carried throughout the town on the wind and could have left the stains that were found on the rag at one of the homes. As for the mad gasser himself, well, he was simply a figment of everyone's imagination. The whole case, he said, was a mistake from beginning to end. Not surprisingly, a spokesman for the Atlas Diesel Engine Plant was quick to deny the allegations that his company had caused the concern in town, maintaining that the only use for that gas in the plant was in their fire extinguishers, and any similar gases used there caused no ill effects in the air. Besides that, why hadn't this gas ever caused problems in the city before? And how exactly was this gas cutting the window screens on Mattoon homes before causing nausea and paralysis? The official explanation also failed to explain how so many identical descriptions of the gasser had been reported to the police. It also neglected to explain how different witnesses managed to report seeing a man of the gasser's description fleeing the scene of an attack, even when the witness had no idea that an attack had taken place. These are good questions. The last gasser attack took place on September 13th, and while it was the last incident connected to the attacker in Mattoon, it was also possibly the strangest. It occurred at the home of a Miss Bertha Bench and her son, Orville. They described the attacker as being a woman who was dressed in a man's clothing, who sprayed gas into the bedroom window. The next morning, footprints that appeared to have been made by a woman's high-heeled shoes were found in the dirt below the window. After this night, the mad gasser of Mattoon was never seen or heard from again. To this day, the identity of the mad gasser remains a mystery, as does the reason why he chose to wreak havoc in Mattoon. Stories have suggested that the Mattoon's gasser was anything from a mad scientist to an ape man. And the researchers today have their own theories, some of which are just as strange. Could he have been some sort of extraterrestrial visitor, using some sort of paralyzing agent to further a hidden agenda? Could he have been some sort of odd inventor who was testing a new apparatus? In 2002, some researchers found a woman who explained that her father had grown up in Mattoon during the time when the gas attacks were taking place, and he told her that there had been two sisters living in town at the time who had a brother who was allegedly insane. A number of people in town believed that he was the mad gasser, and so his sisters locked him in the basement until they could find a mental institution to put him in. After they locked him away, her father told her, the gas attacks stopped. So, is that the answer to the mystery? I don't know. Or, could the gasser have been an agent of our own government who came to an obscure Midwestern town to test some sort of military gas that could be used in the war effort? Whoever, or whatever, the mad gasser was, it vanished into time. Real or imagined, is only a memory in the world of the unknown. Perhaps he was, as Donald M. Johnson wrote in the 1954 issue of the Journal of Abnormal and Social Psychology, simply a shadowy manifestation, some unimaginable unknown. How do we explain the sightings of the mad gasser that were made by people who did not even know the creature was alleged to even exist, or identical sightings from independent witnesses who could not have known that others had just spotted the same figure? Was the gasser, as some have suggested, a visitor from a dimension outside of the town, thus explaining its ability to appear and disappear at will? Was it a creature so outside the realm of our imagination that we'll never be able to comprehend its motives or understand the reasons why it came to Mattoon? I don't know, but I think it was probably some sort of, I don't know, serial killer or something like that who had developed some kind of gas, was using it to prey upon women, and would, you know, sneak up, cut a hole in the window screen, insert this tube and fill the room with gas, paralyzing them to try to cause harm or something else. I don't know. But what's crazy is the stories and that the activity was happening on a nightly basis for just a very short time and then never again. Didn't happen in another town, a couple counties away. Didn't happen in another state. It never happened again. Just in that one small town, that small, tiny window in time. The mad gasser of Mattoon has to go on in history as one of the strangest events to ever happen. I hope you enjoyed it. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Yep, crazy story, the Mad Gasser Mattoon. You know, it's such a bizarre thing because it happened to multiple people for a couple of nights and then never again. That's the strangest thing. What was the person or what was the being? Nobody even knows. What was it trying to gain by sneaking up and filling the room with this gas to paralyze people? What was it going to do? Abduct them? Was it going to rape them? Was it going to murder them? Like, what was it trying to accomplish? You know, there's so many strange scenarios.
Do you think it was a being or do you think it was a person?
I personally think it was a person up to no good.
I kind of feel the same. I feel like it was a person. This is the way I feel. Those steampunk airship stories that we had talked about years of those. Yeah, it feels like this is one of those guys that has got all this crazy stuff and he's trying it out on folks. Like he's going to pull a fast one, right? Maybe he's going to bounce into a bank or a museum. And he's going to be gassing people, knocking them out with the crazy purple knockout gas. And then he's going to gather up all the stuff and take off with
it. Yeah, because the whatever the mad gasser was, it had a gas mask on, right? So the effect would. And the one woman described it as she could smell the gas fill in the room. She could hear the apparatus on his back that was pumping. So you're right. Like I get this idea, like a steampunk thing.
It just feels like it. Almost like what is it? The Rocketeer? Imagine Rocketeer, but the dude's bouncing around. And if not, that's the way I'm going to imagine.
Well, and all of the sightings were of a man, except for one. One of the sightings claimed it was a woman dressed like a man. So were there multiple mad gassers? Like maybe it was a couple, like Bonnie and Clyde, and the male gasser was over at this residence over here doing something. Dude. The female counterpart was over here. Nobody knows. And how many people didn't report the mad gasser? Because several people said that they felt that they were paralyzed. They couldn't. They felt nauseous, vomiting, even bleeding. Like then they're not real sure what the gas was. It's such a that's what makes it's like so a part crazy. Of Americana. It's just so bizarre because there's really nothing else like it I've ever heard anywhere. It wasn't like the phenomenon stopped and then it happened 8 months later, a couple counties over. No, it happened for a couple days and then never again. So it's such a bizarre.
It feels
such
like a
bizarre
test,
story.
Right? Yeah, it feels like they were testing, like they were practicing, or they were gonna. Can we break into the? Can we gas people and break into their homes? Mm-hmm. Because truly, if you were going to be a mad scientist, super criminal, right, evil genius type, ideally, if you were going to break into somebody's house, how easy or how smooth would it be if you could legitimately shoot some crazy purple knockout gas into their house and then just walk around while they're sleeping in their bed and just gather up all the stuff you wanted to gather and then leave with it?
I know, right?
I mean, it's such a weird story.
Very, very strange. Check this out. We have a listener named Chad.
What up, Chad?
Who sent this story in. Very interesting. How would I describe it? Is it a paranormal intervention, a spiritual intervention? A glimmer man encounter? I don't know. Check this out.
Hey, bruds. My name is Chad. I'm from Southern California. You may use my name. My mother moved to Texas, to Granbury, about 18 years ago. Maybe 20 years ago. So I spent a lot of time in Granbury, Weatherford, Stephenville. Eventually she moved to Rio Vista. I used to race motocross, so I actually have trophies that have Weatherford motocross on them. And I raced over in the big cities and stuff like that later on. I wanted to share my experience with you guys. Bothers me to talk about it. I don't like talking about it. My wife doesn't like me talking about it. But something otherworldly happened to me. It was like summer of 2018. I had been working nights and work had slowed down. I'm a heavy equipment operator. So one night I'm laying in bed next to my wife. She's asleep. It's about midnight. And I have the TV on real low and there's no lights on in the room. I hear what sounds like wings outside above my room on the roof. And then I hear like claws or kind of feet, rather something kind of large land on the roof. As it lands, it kind of paces back and forth across the roof, and I didn't pay any attention to it, and I just kept watching TV, and then I wake up the next day and think nothing of it. This went on for about 4 or 5 more days. Somewhere in there, I had shared this information with my mom, and we believe that there's, you know, there's other life out there, that maybe there's things here that we don't quite understand. So it wasn't out of the realm of possibility for her to tell me, maybe you should try talking to it and see what it wants. So that night I went home, and as the days went on, this thing would come back every night, almost like exactly at midnight. It was really odd. And so as I'm laying there, it's like 11:58, and I'm thinking, oh man, it's going to be here any minute. And sure enough, 12 o'clock, I hear the flapping. But now the flapping sounds like two big tarps. Like if you had four people on each corner of like a 8 or 10 foot tarp, and you move it up and move it down, it makes like a big whooshing sound, and it has texture and weight to it. So I hear this, and then I hear the feet hit the roof, and it's directly above my head. When it touches down, I can tell that whatever this is, it's not an owl, it's not a bird. This was in Long Beach, California. You know, we're a couple miles, maybe 3 miles, 4 miles from the ocean. So I don't think it's any kind of a bird from near the ocean. It's, to me, it sounded really strange. And as it hits the roof, it stands there for a minute, and it takes a step. Now, I'm 6 foot tall, 200 pounds. I'm in construction. I've been on roofs before. I know what it sounds like when somebody's walking on your roof, when a grown man is working on your house or walking on wood. And this thing takes its first step, and its foot hits the roof, I hear three sharp taps, like claws hitting as its foot landed. Then I hear the next step. And as I hear it, I can tell that its gait is probably equal to mine. So now I'm like, it was the strangest thing. I wasn't scared, and I wasn't excited, but I it was like I didn't want to move, and I didn't want to do anything to make it stop or anything like that. So I just listened intently, and I studied the sounds that this thing was making. As the second step hit the roof, the same three claws, like they tapped. They tapped in an order, like 1, 2, 3, as it stepped. And it steps again, 1, 2, 3, the taps. And it steps one more time, 1, 2, 3, the taps. Now the distance it walked was a good maybe 12 feet to the opposite end of my bedroom, and it stopped, didn't move anymore. And I just thought the words, "What do you want?" No sooner than that thought left my mind, I now hear the claws start to what sound like crushing and puncturing the wall on the opposite side of my room, as if somebody was like kicking their feet into the wall to punch a hole in, and then the other leg would step down and punch its foot into the wall, then the next one lower. It was like it coming down a ladder, except it was clawing itself into the wall. I'm hearing all of this. I don't see anything. It was almost like the roof wasn't even there. Like this thing just made its way through hard material, through matter. And it was walking and climbing down my bedroom wall, and I can hear it step onto the floor. Now, this house was built sometime in the 50s, a little bit on the old side. Insulation wasn't so great. I mean, if people were standing outside the house, I could hear them talking. Single pane windows, it also had a raised foundation, so the whole house had hardwood floors, and the floors creaked and moaned when you walked on them. When it touched down on the floor, I could tell that it had a weight to it, like at least my body weight or more. And it stood in the corner of the room, almost waiting for my next command. And I, at this point, I'm completely beside myself. But again, I'm still not afraid. And I feel stupid for not being afraid, because I think maybe I should have been. But I kept on. And again, a thought entered my mind. If you're really there, prove it. Go push the door. So my bedroom door was propped open, and there's about a 6-inch gap between the back of the door and the bedroom wall. I hear it walk one step at a time across my floor of my bedroom. I can sense its presence. Its presence is big and cumbersome. And it lumbered along, like it moved with purpose, but without care, which made me feel safe, made me feel comfortable. It made me think that I was in control, I guess. I hear the doorknob jiggle, and the door moves and hits the wall and comes back. It kind of bounced off of the wall and swung back, just gently, not hard, not abrupt, not forcefully, just gently. So I still am in disbelief, and I say, walk down the hall and push the door at the end of the hall. And the hall was maybe 20 feet long. Now this part of the hallway is very creaky, and I can hear every step that this thing made as it walked that 20 feet. And again, jiggly door handles and the doors all butt up against the walls. This is a big bathroom door. The door jiggles and bounces off of the wall in the bathroom. I am totally blown away. I'm excited. If there's any fear, it's very buried, and I am not paying attention to that. So as it does this, I now hear the direction of the footsteps start walking back towards my bedroom. Again, it doesn't pick up its pace. It's not walking slowly. It's walking with intent back towards my bedroom. As it enters the room, it's walking past my wife, who's asleep on the left side of the bed from me. And each step it takes, I no longer hear the claws tapping the floor or digging into the floor. I just hear what sounds like a heavy, muffled footstep on the wood floors. And it walks past my wife, and it starts to walk in front of my bed, and it's now no more than 7 feet away from me. I cannot see anything, but it was almost as if the information that I had collected about its weight, about its gait, about its size, it almost painted a picture of what this thing looked like. And I'm telling you guys, there was something there. And I've hear these stories about Glimmer Man and about invisible beings, and this thing continues to walk. It gets to the corner of my bed, and it takes 3 steps to get to me. As it is no more than a foot away, I can also sense that it is tall, that I'm 6 foot tall. This thing is probably 7 or 8 feet tall. And it stops about a foot or foot and a half away from me. And it bends from the waist down so that its head is coming directly to my head. If I was able to look at a head or a face or eyes, our eyes were locked. And it, to me, it almost felt like it was saying, "You can see me," or "How can you see me?" It was, I didn't hear any words. I didn't hear anything. It was just a feeling that I was seeing this somehow, and I'm not supposed to, or it was surprised that I did see it. I also got the sense that it had a very round, very large head, like a basketball maybe. Again, this is a sense. I don't have a picture. I'm not seeing anything. And it came within inches of my face. The feeling I had is if you're in a room with your eyes closed and someone walks in, you know that there is a person there. You know when somebody's got their hand in your face, if your eyes are closed, you know there's something right in your face. This is the feeling and the sensation that I had. Right as it got in my face, I my fear kicked in and I turned away from it, and immediately I just thought, "You are not welcome here, and this is a house of God." Instantly, it was at my back door, which is 60 feet away from my bedroom. Now, it's pounding on the door, and it's shaking the handle. It was like mad that I banished it, that I told it wasn't welcome there, and it seemed like it was trying so hard to come back into the house. I'm totally shocked now. I'm a little bit scared, and I'm trying to shake my wife. It was like she could not be woken up. And as the shaking is continuing and the pounding on the door, I'm saying my wife's name, wake up, wake up, wake up. She finally goes, ah, what? And by the time she stopped answering me, the sound of the door stopped completely, just dead silence. I asked her if she heard anything. She says, no, I didn't hear anything. And I told her, you would never believe me what just happened. And I explained to her what I just experienced, and she laughed at me and told me I watched too many alien shows or I listened to too many conspiracies. You know, go back to bed. You're crazy. And it was the worst feeling in the ever to not have my wife believe me. It really made me feel like shit, because I genuinely experienced something that I cannot explain, that we are told these things aren't real, that they don't exist, that, you know, if you don't see it, you don't believe it. And I, without a doubt, 100% know that there is definitely things in our world moving around with us that we have no knowledge of whatsoever. Now, it's also important to know that during this time, I was taking prescription painkillers. I had been taking them for about a decade. And at this time, I was struggling with the decision to stop taking them. It was starting to take over my life, and they were not helping me anymore. So I was going back and forth with, should I take them? No, I don't want to take them. And after this episode, I made a declaration. I am done with pills. I'm not taking them anymore. My wife and kids had been attending church for about 3 years, and I had chosen to not go with them and not be a part of that. Within 3 months, I was off pills completely. And in January, I was attending church with my family, and I have been going there since. I've hardly missed a service. Now, I don't know if I hear lots of different explanations as to what these things could be, but when I made that declaration that I was going to stop the medication and that I was going to go to church, something inside of me changed. And a few months after this happened, this was like late summer, I think. A few months later, I was with my family, and we were out spending the day together. We were on a ferry, and it was kind of an overcast, cloudy day. We're crossing some water in Newport Beach, and I had this overwhelming feeling of love and light, fullness, warmth. I mean, it was the most wonderful, beautiful feeling that I could ever experience in my life. And as this was happening, I uncontrollably am crying, and I felt like I was getting a message that said, you made the right choice. And it immediately took me back to that night when this thing was in my room. I don't know if it may be hard to believe, but that's what I believe, and that's what I think. I think that night I had made a decision to either continue to let this entity into my life, whether I knew it was there or not, or to get rid of it and choose a different, better, cleaner path. And when I had this experience on the ferry, it just gave me confirmation that I had made the right choice. about my second church service, our pastor was preaching about experiencing being touched by God, and she explained that some people experience this warm, loving light that's just resonates from inside out. And immediately as she's saying this, I'm like, that's what I experienced. That's got to be what I experienced. There's no other way to describe what I felt on that ferry. Earlier this year, and I was listening to some other podcast, and Mysterious Universe, I think it was, and they had touched on opiates weakening people's auric fields and things becoming attached to people. I've heard in the past in somewhere else that maybe addictions are these invisible entities that attach themselves to us, and they, you know, they suck the energy from our bodies, whatever that is. I don't know, but from what I experienced, that seems pretty reasonable for the experience that I went through. About 2 months later, I'm walking to my truck in the morning, and I'm walking down the street. I'm looking up. It's still dark. It's like 5 a.m. The sun's not out yet. And about a couple hundred feet above a house, I'm looking up to the sky, and there's a row of two-story houses to my left, and I'm looking just above them and at the stars. The sky's really pretty, and stars are lit up real bright, and I see what I can only describe as an egg-shaped object, that the back of it looked like lava, like an old-school lava lamp, yellow and orange and kind of reddish, and this thing moved so fast. I only saw it for about 4 seconds. It was flying completely parallel with the ground below it, with the roof line of the homes. It didn't have a curve to it, any kind of an arc. It wasn't flying at an angle. This thing was hauling ass, and it moved so quickly. It was silent. This street actually comes from the Los Alamitos Naval Base, or Seal Beach Naval Yard, whatever it is, close where I live now in Huntington Beach. The aircraft for the Long Beach Airport fly across this road at 2,000 or 3,000 feet above this thing that I saw flying across the roof line of these houses. It blew my mind. No sound, no wings, no helicopter propellers, no nothing. And it was probably the size of a school bus, maybe. Like, not a cylinder, not cigar shaped. It was like an egg. It was good size. So fast forward maybe another 5 months down the road, coming home from church, it was a beautiful full moon. The moon was huge, and it was low in the sky. And I had been watching it at church. We were having church out in the parking lot due to COVID restrictions. As we're coming home, I turned down my street, that same street I was walking on when I saw the egg-shaped object. My wife is sitting next to me in the passenger seat. My two kids are in the back seat. My daughter said something to my wife. She turned around. And as she turned around, I see this basketball-sized yellow, orangish orb. Almost looked like it was transparent in the center. It came across the top of a big two-story house, dipped down into the street in front of my car, maybe, I don't know, 50 feet away from me. It was moving so fast, faster than anything I've ever seen. it was unbelievably fast. And as it dropped down into the street, it was maybe 15 feet off of the ground. I can't get the words out fast enough. I say, look, 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 look. And my wife kind of is startled and she turns around. Before she could even turn around, this thing made its way across the street up to a house. It made a 90 degree turn in front of a house, and it 180 degree turn in front of the house, shot back into the street, made a 90 degree turn, and flew down the street and up over the houses and straight towards the ocean within 5 seconds. By the time my wife turned around, she saw nothing. So to me, there is all this connected. I don't know. One thing I can say for sure is I have a very open mind, and I am willing to see what is unseeable. I think I'm very privileged in this way. I haven't seen anything since that orb, and that was maybe 6 months ago. So as it stands, I see something about maybe every 6 months. So I'm waiting for my next encounter, and when it comes, I'll let you guys know. Thank you for letting me share. I appreciate your show. I love hearing everybody else's stories. By the way, I have not heard anybody have an experience like mine, and I have listened to every one of your shows from the beginning and other podcasts as well. So I really hope that somebody else can share something like this. If they've had an experience like mine, I'd really appreciate knowing, and you can pass on my information.
Thank you, Chad. Very cool for sending that in.
Snaps.
What a strange story. He has, over a series of a couple nights, a bizarre encounter with something he can't see, like the Glimmer Man. He can feel its presence in the room. He has an addiction problem, and somehow he decided to stop this, and his life is cleaned up for the better. He's a better husband, better father, everything. It's like, are some of the people that have problems with addiction, are there like entities that are attached to them? I don't know. It was like some kind of like paranormal intervention that changed his life. It seemed demonic at the time, but it ended up changing his life for the better. So perhaps it was a guardian angel. I don't know. Strange,
perhaps
strange
it was
encounter.
A past loved one that had been down the wrong path, and this is part of their penance was to turn a family member off the path, right? Like,
yeah, possibly.
But there's so many things, yeah.
But the clawing, you could hear the claws, and you could hear it clawing down the wall. Like, it just seemed like it was something demonic. But either way,
evil.
Thanks you for sending that in, Chad. Yeah. And I'm glad you were able to clean up your life. Cam.
Yeah.
What do you got planned for the rest of your week?
Man, oh man, I'm going to try to get in the woods. I'm going to try to drag your ass out there with me too, so we can get out there and run around. We still got to end up getting into a few critters before we run out of time. And that's about it. My granddaughter is got to go fulfill some more of her baby peach pageant stuff. So she's going to be in some Christmas parade this weekend.
Right,
but it's in the evening. It's like some nighttime Christmas parade or something. So I'll probably go to that if it's – I'm going to hunt, and then I'm going to leave the hunting and then go straight to that. It's going to be one of those deals. But, yeah, that's pretty much all I've got laid out. I've got two shows I'm working on right now, and I'm going to try to release not just some elite shows I've got done, but I'm going to try to release some video stuff that I want to try to record this week.
Right on. I have to go to Luke's birthday party because Luke's birthday – fell on Thanksgiving. Obviously, he can't have a birthday party because all his friends are doing other obligations. So we're going to be at Urban Air this weekend. And I'm sure there's going to be like, 30 kids there going
everybody's
crazy.
Everybody's going crazy.
So I'm going to be hiding in a corner, either watching the World Cup or watching the Dallas Stars who are number one in the Western Conference. Yes, they've been playing really good. My hat's off to the team. The new coach has really made a big difference. Jason Robertson is the top goal scorer in the whole NHL. It's finally nice to have somebody of that caliber on our team. But overall, in the entire league, my hat's off to the Jersey Devils.
It's got to make you feel good too, don't it?
Yeah, another one of my favorite teams.
So your two teams are doing well.
Very good, yeah. For now. Now I'm sure it'll, you know, we got a long season, so.
There's a lot of games.
Let's not get too crazy. There can be a lot of injuries and a lot of stuff can change. But yeah, very good. Very cool. That's about all I'm going to be doing this weekend.
My son's birthday's this weekend.
Oh, see?
Yeah, Brandon's birthday's this weekend.
Well, how old will he be now?
29.
29, Jesus.
It's like, you want to feel old?
Now I remember when he was born, right? Holy
29. Yeah.
Let's not forget about our sponsors. If you're 50 plus and alive or 50 to 75 in New York, you can apply for Gerber Life Guaranteed Life Insurance. For a free quote, just go to GerberLifeFamily.com. And don't forget about Felix Gray Glasses. Go to FelixGrayGlasses.com/expanded for free shipping, free returns, and free exchanges. They have non-prescription, prescription, blue light readers and sunglasses. Cam, yep.
Have you watched any of the new Willow series?
No, because I think it just came out like a day ago.
Okay, so I was going to wait till they all drop, but I don't think I can. I'm going to have to. That's another thing I'm going to look into. Anything that's in fantasy and high fantasy realm related, I got to check out.
Oh, I planned on checking it out. It's just, I'm like you. I like to let a couple of them drop, then I watch because I like to binge stuff.
You got your new dice ready?
Anyway, yes, yes. I bathed them in moonlight this week. I burned sage around them, cursed at them, kissed them. Caressed them.
Begged.
Yeah, because the last couple of sessions, boy, it's been tough.
It's been hard out here for a pimp when you're trying to roll those dice.
I'm telling you. If you have any stories you'd like to share with the folks that listen, as well as me and Cam, please do not hesitate. You can email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com, or you can call the hotline like Chad did. If you want to tell your story, 888-393-2783. I hope everybody out there has a good week. Please be safe. Till next week, that's about all the time we have for this show. I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.